I'm not going to put my money on it, but I don't think he has the citizenship yet. But I do know for a fact that he has residency. So that could be a potential issue as well.
It could even be an issue that he was in Iran at some point. Like, I know that this was an issue with someone I know who normally would have no problem getting a visa to the United States, but traveled to Cuba at some point, which makes it much more difficult and means that you have to get another type of visa.
Yeah.
Which takes a lot longer, and there's a higher chance that you get rejected.
The news are quite positive. As of right now, I think they basically have a self-imposed deadline of Friday, the organizers, to get everything sorted out, or at least see that they're moving in the right direction. They did say that they're moving in the right direction. The guy that you were mentioning at the beginning that said that the Indians got their visas also was on national television. They're basically trying to pressure the Canadian government to do things quickly. Our technique failed us. Can I say that? Can I say that? Yeah. Our technique failed us? Welcome back, everybody, to another C-Squared podcast episode. A lot of things in the world of chess have happened since the last time we recorded an episode. The big news is FIDE potentially having to relocate the Candidates tournament 1 month before the first move is being played from Canada to potentially Spain. We will be discussing that in just a second. Fabi, a lot of crazy things are happening right now before the Candidates. Tell us how those rumors impact you, if they impact you at all.
Well, certainly they could impact me. It depends on whether or not the Candidates gets moved because of potential visa issues. So I don't have visa issues because American citizens can travel to Canada freely. And also, I think American green card holders.
That's
so
right.
If you have a green card, that you can also travel to Canada freely. But the players in the tournament, some come from India. Actually, many come from India. Some come from Russia. We're also counting the women's candidates, of course, because they were held at the same time. And for example, Abbasov comes from Azerbaijan. And I think also Faruja would need a visa. I'm not sure if he's a French citizen. I guess he is. But yeah, he's a French resident, and I
think he got residency. I'm not going to put my money on it, but I don't think he has the citizenship yet. But I do know for a fact that he has residency, so that could be a potential issue as well.
It could even be an issue that he was in Iran at some point. Like, I know that this was an issue with someone I know who normally would have no problem getting a visa to the United States. But traveled to Cuba at some point, which makes it much more difficult and means that you have to get another type of visa.
Yeah.
Which takes a lot longer, and there's a higher chance that you get rejected. So depending on where you've been, can also have some issues. But yeah, Russians clearly have some issues. I think that from what I've seen, the Indian players have all been granted visas. That's what I've seen. So this is according to the Canadian Chess Federation president. In that case, I guess that does make it quite a bit more likely that Canada will manage to get everything done in time.
Yeah.
But then we're thinking that Jan, a Russian player, and Goryachkina, Russian player, might still be having trouble getting a visa, and maybe Abbasov, and maybe Faruja. I'm not sure. But
what about
I haven't spoken to anyone.
The Chinese players that are in the women's candidates.
Yeah, also players, could right? be, also could be an issue. That's also true.
Lei and Tan Zongyi and Lei Tingzhe.
Yeah, so there are a lot of potential people who could be affected.
Right,
and Canada, I think, is not that. It's not easy to get in.
No. And it seems like there is a backlog due to COVID. This was the problem for the U.S. as well. I know for a fact that my parents actually were trying to get visas for the U.S. And the backlog during COVID was about 2 years. Now things have smoothened out, but it's country by country. Some countries have not recovered from that, and Canada seems to be one of those countries. So yeah, potentially quite problematic. Now, the rumors are, or at least that's what has been discussed, that the replacement for Canada would be Spain. The last candidates was in Spain, but logistically this would change a lot of things, even let's say for you, right? Time zone differences are quite important.
I'd have to go change time zone for 7 hours rather than 1 hour, which would be Toronto would be 1 hour. Still, Western Europe or Europe in general would be easier than if it were to go to Asia, for example, right? Then, so I don't have any inside information. I also saw that Spain was mentioned as an alternative. If it were to go to like Kazakhstan, and this is of course the biggest change that it could be, like if it were to go really far east,
yeah,
which I guess there's a theoretical possibility, but I really don't know. I was thinking to ask them like how it's moving along, but I haven't gotten around to that yet. It's still some time to make it. So I had actually heard this like as a potential problem in like October,
right?
Or maybe it was November, but yeah, around that period, I heard that there was a potential problem with visas and Russian players, Boryachkina, Lakhno, Jan. So then nothing happened. I heard no news. I was like, okay, probably not an issue, right? If we're not hearing anything about it and it's already coming up on like a month away, which it actually is a month away, mm-hmm. then yeah, probably not going to be an issue. And then suddenly we hear that it is actually an issue, not a rumored issue, but a real issue. So we'll see how that progresses.
No, absolutely. I mean, definitely a difficult problem to overcome. The news are quite positive as of right now. I think they basically have a self-imposed deadline of Friday, the organizers, to get everything sorted out, or at least see that they're moving in the right direction. They did say that they're moving in the right direction. The guy that you were mentioning at the beginning that said that the Indians got their visas also was on national television. They're basically trying to pressure the Canadian government to do things quickly and solve these things quickly. Now, outside of the players, though, you know, you might have seconds, helpers from certain countries that cannot get visas easily. You might have... Yeah,
this is on the players.
Mm-hmm. This is on...
Like the FIDE can't, or the organizers can't ensure that everyone who you might potentially want to take, like this is, if you can't take your second, if you can't get them there in time, right. That's sort of on you, I think. It's not really... Because there's all sorts of logistical issues. Like what if suddenly a week before I decide that I want to work with someone else, and now can you please get him a visa in time or get her a visa in time? And yeah, that's really on the players to manage that their seconds get there. And I don't think that's a question. Mm-hmm. Now, official FIDE people could be an issue.
Yes, like even photographers, I think. Who was it? Maria, I think, Emelianova posted at some point on Twitter that she might have had some problems. I hope I'm not
mistaken. Would sort of think that in general, unless you can't get anyone over, but if you just can't get like a select few people who are part of like the crew, mm-hmm. then this shouldn't be a game changing issue, right?
Yeah.
Like let's say you can't get an arbiter or you can't get a photographer to Canada. Like you shouldn't move the entire event because of this. That would be pretty odd, right?
Yeah.
Like just find someone else.
Yeah. So this is March 4th right now. They did say that they will make a decision whether they're going to keep it in Canada or try to move it around by March 7th. By March 8th. That would be on Friday. So still a few days left, but definitely right now it's looking better than it used to look like 24 hours ago. With the Indian players getting their visas, that's an encouraging sign, but still plenty of work to be done. So
the But the issue will very often come down to Russia, right? I mean,
Most likely, yes.
this is more of a like a sticking point if for Canada than Indian players would be, right?
I'm not
I
sure.
don't
I'm not sure
it,
because
maybe not.
the Canadian-Indian relationships, political relationships, are pretty tense right now as well.
Yeah, that's true.
So
But
I don't know.
like from a let's say from a point of view of what how the world feels in general, like Russia is going to be more of an issue.
Sure.
If it's like a public thing where Canada's thinking, well, well, I don't know who would be in charge of that. So some who they're reaching out to, I guess some like some minister, right?
I believe this is what they're trying to do right now. They're trying to reach out to the minister of, of visas or like of international travel. I don't know exactly how it's called, but yeah, there is some sort of a minister. Cool. So yeah, that's big problem. Big problem. Hopefully FIDE will be able to solve it. They have a few days left until they have to make a decision. It seems like everything should be clarified by the end of the week. Do you feel anything different, or you're not really focused on this at all? You're just letting it
Not too
play out.
worried. We'll see how it plays out. It's not in my control. So yeah, not too worried at the moment.
Cool. All right. That kind of covers our logistic problems. We played some chess. We played the semifinals of the team chess battle against Wesley and Alice. We knew that is going to be a more difficult match than the one against Anish and Danny. And it was a pretty tricky match. The first game, I think we played a great game. We got the winning advantage, and then our technique failed us. Can I say that? Can I say that
Yeah,
our technique failed us?
also very good defender. So, oh, why do we do this to ourselves?
What if they go rook c3?
D2,
King c4? Ah, we have. What do we have?
knight D2, king B5. Yeah, it might not. I'm not sure about that one. Might be winning, it might not.
Ah, no. We have King d1. Take, King e2, King c4, King d1.
Okay, yeah, you're right. Yeah, king e2, king e2. Wow, this was very clutch. Very nice.
Yeah.
You won us the game, which we.
Oh my goodness. Whew.
Well, I think it was a really nice game, and then yeah, at some point we just. I mean, I had a feeling, I had this bad feeling, like at some moment. Like after rook takes a3, because yeah, we are a piece up, but it's possible to mess this up. Okay, I think that the main mistake was that we made this like practical mistake was we made this move king h4 rather than just going for king g4, where it's impossible to mess up. And we did consider it, and it was like, what do we do? Do we go for it? Do we not? I mean, I sort of thought, okay, we're gonna win either way, right? So. But this is the way, like this is the way I would do it in a game, in an over the board game,
You
because
would
I,
take on
no
F on
matter
G4
who
and
my
F1.
opponent is, like even if I'm playing a computer, there's no way I don't win this. So while in other position, if I'm playing a computer, okay, there's some doubt maybe in my mind that, like the computer will put up resistance, but this one, it's like no matter who you are, no matter who you're playing against, there's nothing to really calculate. You just kind of push your pawns forward. You're up two pawns. It's a very simplified position. So then, okay, we played. It's on an objective mistake, king h4.
I will take blame for that because in the end you told me, okay, just choose something. I think we were down to our last minute at this point. We had to make a decision. And my greed basically spoke for itself, if
Yeah,
you
I mean,
want to
it's not
put
a
it that way.
mistake. It's just maybe like not the most practical.
By
And
the
then,
engine,
like,
by the way, King H4 is the better move. But
yeah,
from a
but it's
practical
like
perspective, definitely not.
both moves are definitely game over in the right hands. Just that we like our objective mistake where we messed the win up was probably started with bishop takes g2. That's where it started. Like, if we don't give this bishop up, I was kind of hesitant, but like we should have just played a move like bishop e4, for example. And yeah. I think I was like suggested this for a second, then I saw some rook h4 check, and I was like, oh, let's not do it. But rook h4 leads nowhere, and like here, basically, there are positions where you're winning, but you have to prove it, and there are positions where you're winning, but your opponent has to try to find some counterplay. Mm-hmm. And after bishop e4, it's the latter, where our opponent has to try to find some counterplay, which doesn't exist.
Yeah.
While after bishop g2, king g2, king f4, king d6, it's actually the former, where we are the ones who have to kind of find the way, because there are a lot of natural moves that are going to be a draw. So it's like our path is limited. Like, let's say rook c8, rook a2, I see a computer says knight b7, for example. And like king d5 and then king e3. So it's like already playing with only moves. And then b3, rook c, the win already became very difficult.
Yeah. Rook c5 and rook b5. Yeah, this is not easy. This is not easy stuff.
And then like, I guess it's already after we played rook d3, which I think was my suggestion, but already to win it, we would have had to like dig pretty deep. Maybe not so deep, but knight d4. And then rook goes to d5. Turns out that it's much better.
Put the rook on b5.
But the rook on d3, yeah, it's like probably not winning. I guess we had like some kind of miraculous knight d2, but it was already past the point where a human could probably win this.
Yeah. Yeah. And then,
okay, then they blocked.
They made a significant mistake trying to simplify. And, you know, we kind of conceptually, we made the same mistake. We tried to simplify the position to something technical, right? A technical position, which we know that it's winning by taking on g2, just minimized material. And that's exactly what we tried to do as well with rook c3. Unfortunately, they
It is good to know that this position with the king on b5, for example, is a draw. Although it's not maybe like something you'll ever see in your own game.
Right.
But it's very unusual, right? Because it is like a protected pawn, blockaded passed pawn, piece up, a knight up. It's and if we get our king to like b2, I guess that we win, right? I mean, if the king ever gets there.
Is there a way to stop it?
Yeah, we can never get our
king. Save from check. Yeah, that's a very good point. There's
like we were trying checks. And like we could never get there because like let's say like the rook always stays on the second, and if we ever try to bring our king back, we need to use our rook, but then the knight on b3 starts hanging. So there's no way to bring our king back to the queen side to protect the knight where it needs to be.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting endgame. It's definitely not like the thing is, people who watch on these live streams, they kind of just look at the bar, right? They're not looking at the position at all. So for them, it's like, oh, this is like a simple draw because the bar is level.
It's going up and up, or like this one level.
Yeah. I don't think that most people would know that this is a draw unless they played around, like strong players would know that it's a draw unless they played around with it and eventually they found that you can't really make progress. But it's not an obvious draw. I've seen this like with the pawn on a6, knight on c5. There was a very famous game, Kramnik-Kasparov from the World Championship match in London. I forget which game it was. It was an early one. Maybe like round 6 or... So Kramnik actually ended up winning this match, but he did miss a win in this game. Let me see if I can try to find this game, because it is interesting.
Yeah. No, and... as you mentioned, people don't actually know that it's a draw. You don't have access to the engine during the game. So this is quite crucial. You don't see the bar going up and down. And I've actually gone through these games and I've listened to the commentary that we were giving. And I realized how bad most people are at assessing live in play the positions, even in the opening phase. Like sometimes we thought that we're clearly better and the position objectively was very close to equal. The same goes for our opponents. They thought that they're better or like sometimes worse, and the position was somewhere around equal. It just goes to show how practicality in the game of chess is so different than the objective, cold, raw assessment of the engine.
Yeah. So in this game, I found like it was pawn a6, knight on c7, piece up and a pawn up. And yeah, it was actually like a mutual blunder game, I think. Because I think Black had a draw at some point, but then made a mistake, and then Kremnik was winning, but made a mistake, and the game ended in a draw. And like White lost the pawn. So these things are tough. I mean, that was a world championship match between two of the best players of all time, right? Gary, yeah. Arguably best player of all time, or second best, and Kremnik certainly among the best players of all time. So yeah, like what you said, I've also noticed that players misevaluate often. Top all players as well. But I think our evaluation function was pretty good in this match. Like, we had a general idea of where we were standing. Like, we were slightly better. Then much better, it felt like. Then we won a piece. Okay, it's obvious to everyone that White is winning now. And then we were a bit late to realize that it's a draw here. But I think we started to feel the danger that we were endangering the win.
You definitely did. I did not so much. I was like feeling pretty secure, even with the knight on b3 and the rook on d3. But that's when the position is basically objectively a draw. But yeah, even at that point, I felt that, okay, we should find a way. Like, I felt there should be a way out of this difficult situation. But there's not. And the defense is actually quite easy if you think about it. But yeah. That was game one, and then game two, I have to say. Not a great game by us. We got a good position out of the opening, but we completely...
No, we actually didn't. We didn't.
We didn't get a good position. I thought we got a great position.
No, taking on c4 is not a good move. I mean, it was my suggestion, so I'm taking the blame for this one. Which I should have known. I think I even had it in my notes that like Black should play c6, for example. And taking on c4, yeah, the position we got is very dangerous. Okay. Like, after we're up pawn, it's borderline a bad position. We actually defended it pretty well. Like, h6, c5 was okay. a5, the idea that I was mentioning, is actually the best move. But we were on the right path, like a5 or c5.
Yeah.
Then I think a5 was the, like, only chance. It's plus one here. It's already, like, borderline losing for Black.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
Then going to an endgame, we're suddenly like more or less getting out of it. Yeah. And then we were fine. Like, even this g6 move that I made was kind of okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And knight f6 and everything. Just like we made a tactical mistake. After bishop f6, if you remember this moment, we had to play rook to e6. And here it's an unclear endgame, which is fine for Black.
That's a nice move, actually. Rook to e6, bishop takes d8. You still force the taking of the exchange with the bishop on d8, which is a badly placed bishop. We basically lost a tempo, or maybe even two tempis, because now you take on e4 with a tempo, the rook has to move, then you take on a3, and you should be fine, more or less.
Yeah, but then, okay, it was a very tough endgame for both sides, actually. Like, bishop c7 is a mistake. G5, I think, is a mistake, but it's very difficult. F4. Okay, F4 was a very obvious mistake, because how can you allow knight c2?
Yeah.
And then we were getting a bit confused, I think, like, low on time. We played knight g4, knight c2 was more accurate.
Knight c2 just finishes the game, more or less, because they cannot go to g2. So they cannot pass that line to go hide on h1. King g2 just...
And the big mistake was my suggestion, king g6, because knight g4 is making a draw. By force. And I think Alice also realized this.
Yeah.
And then they came up with h3, which was very logical, because you're stopping knight g4.
Yeah.
And it's a very good move. And then we're in danger again. And g4, they played really well for a few minutes. Bishop e5, really good move. Everything was perfect. This moment, remember where I said, like, maybe rook takes a4 is better than rook d3? This was actually a good move for them.
Yeah. Yeah,
this is the best move. Rook d3 was giving us chances again. Okay, it was like back and forth for a bit.
Yeah.
We actually had very serious drawing chances, even when I was like really worried. But
I mean, at this point, eventually we're all playing... Well, actually, us, we were playing on increment.
Yeah, yeah. It was tough. It's a very tough endgame to defend when you're down on time, or even maybe with sufficient time. Okay, we got to this like losing endgame, but they couldn't find a way to win. Surprisingly, they should have won it. I mean, they should have found the Zooks one.
Were you having any flashbacks from your game against MVL? Obviously, that's what it reminded me of. I know the structure was slightly different. I think there was a pawn on the g-file, right? Was that how it was? Like pawn on
g-file? Okay, so that was with pawn on g6.
Pawn on g6 for black, right?
Yeah, versus... versus pawn on f. No, sorry. Pawn on f6 versus pawn on g2. Getting confused.
Yes.
Black had a pawn on f6. White has a pawn on g2.
Yes.
And if the pawn ever goes to g4, it's a draw. And if black ever gets knight to g7 with the pawn f6, it's a fortress. Which I realized during the game, but Maxime didn't. And eventually, I zugzwanged him. It was a very complicated zugzwang with a lot of mistakes. But eventually, I realized that I need to get my king to the h-file. But how do I do it? Because if he plays king g4, if I play king g4, he plays king g6, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I get my king to h5, it's winning. So I need to kind of give a check to his king on the g-file, rook g3. That's why I can't push my pawn. His king goes to f7, because if it goes to h7, then he's cut off. But now if I play king g4, he goes king g6. Again, so I can't do that. So I needed to find a way to get my king around. And the way I did that was by forcing his knight to g8 by using Zugzwang. And then I play king g4. And now if king g6, I go king h4. And he has to go back, allowing my king to h5 because he needs to defend the knight on g8. So this was kind of the idea. But he did have moments when he was objectively drawing. And I had moments when I missed some wins.
Yeah.
And it was one of, like, these are some of the more complicated endgames, and like Magnus was trying to figure it out during the game, and I think unsuccessfully, because it's just really complicated. You'd be surprised by the limited material, but it's very complicated stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what I know about these positions is that, like, having a fixed pawn, like a pawn f5 versus pawn f4, is a very bad thing, because then like the king will usually have a free access to the e5 square, for example.
And this is what,
so it's better to have like a f6
pawn on f6, but they forced us to put the pawn on f5.
Yeah, we had no, it was losing from the beginning. We had no way to avoid that.
Yeah, the knight was not having a way back. We had to go f5. Yeah,
the pawn f5 is good if we get the knight to either e6 or g6, which we eventually did. We got it to e6, and then it's a draw. I didn't realize that g6 also works. Like, if for some reason I thought e6 was the square that we need to be at, but g6 just works perfectly fine as well. Like, they can't make progress. Which kind of should be obvious, but I didn't make this connection during the game.
So let's just show the way that they could have won the game. So I think it was something along the lines of at move, this was move 98 after king to e7. If they go on the back rank, rook to a8, we have to go king to f6. The knight cannot move because king to e5 counts and the pawn on f5 loses. We have to go king f6, king d6. We have to defend against check on f8 with king to f7. And now you just have to lose a tempo. This was the Zugzwang situation that you were discussing.
This is with the knight on g4, yeah.
With the knight on g4, yeah. The knight cannot
move. Knight on g4, then there was like multiple moments they could have gotten this, but yeah, you just wait with the rook on a8 or b8 or c8. And the king on d6, so black can't play king e7. And then if the king ever allows the king, like king g7, king e6, then the king is too far in. King f6, rook f8 again allows the king to e6. And moving the knight allows king to e5. And once the king is on e5 in any position, it's game over.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was winning. And I'm a bit surprised they didn't find it. But they let us go.
We were close. We were close to our downfall, at least in that game. And then a potential Armageddon. But we made it. We're in the finals, and now we're waiting for March 5th, tomorrow. A big match between Hikaru and Levy, the content creators and the commentators, Robert Hess and Dania. Who do you have in that one? Who do you want to see in the finals?
Yeah, you know, Robert and Dania would be fun. I haven't played Robert in so long. Like, we're the same age. We grew up together.
Yeah.
So, like, early 2000s, late 90s, we were playing all of these kids' events. like Pan-American Youth and all these like Super Nationals, all these whatever these tournaments are called. And since then, I didn't see him for a long time between like, let's say 2004 and like 2010. I don't think I saw him once because he was playing in the US, he was going to high school and so on, and I was playing in Europe. And then I saw him at the Olympiad in 2010 briefly, but we didn't really know each other. Like we had known each other as kids, but then we had lost touch, so we didn't really know each other. And then like a few years later, when I moved back to the US, we started to get to know each other again. And we're quite good friends. So that would be interesting. It's been a long time. We have played each other a bit online, so that's but not too much.
The ICC
and Danya, I've played a little bit over the board. I think we have two classical games, one win each. And besides that, not a whole lot.
Yeah.
A whole lot. But they're both excellent players. Okay. Now, the team of Hikaru and Levy. The thing is that Hikaru can guide Levy very well into the right direction and can sometimes take over, right, if need be.
Yeah.
He can take the wheel. And then you're just play like objectively Hikaru is of course stronger than either Danya or Robert. So but I think that we shouldn't discount that it is a team battle, it is a team event, and sometimes people think, oh, it's just going to be the stronger player making moves. It's actually not the case at all, I think. The stronger player guides decisions, sometimes makes some decisions, but it isn't like just saying, okay, do this, because it wouldn't really look very nice, right? If you just said, okay, make this move, don't talk to me, just move this, move that, right?
Of course.
So that's not the idea of the event. And that's why you see the back and forth between the players. And also if a...
like, but do you think it would be better if the stronger player would be like that? Would be just like, don't talk to me, just play this move up until the final few seconds when you basically have to take over as the player with the mouse?
I don't think it's realistic because the lower rated player would say stuff, and right. you have to have a conversation. You wouldn't just say shut up, I'm playing here, right? So
you can talk about the weather. Like,
and also it when you hear something it kind of gets into your mind. Like we saw Anish and Danny was suggesting some good stuff sometimes, but Anish was discounting it on principle, which is probably not a correct approach. And he actually missed some important resources, right? Like B takes C3 on move 18, I think basically the game-changing move that they could have played that Danny was suggesting, sack the exchange, which we realized that it was the correct approach. Danny realized, and Anish, for whatever reason, decided not to go for it, which was a huge mistake, like a very, very serious mistake.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, but I think that Hikaru, like I saw their match, they seem to have a good back and forth. They were playing really well in the Armageddon game or the other games. I think they made like two draws.
And then in the Armageddon, they had White and Eric and Jordan went down to like 5 minutes and 57 seconds. I think that was their bid, which at least to my understanding was a bit too low. Because it's so important. I mean, yeah. It's so difficult to play whenever you have just a few seconds on the clock. Even if you get the 10 seconds increment, it's just simply not enough. You start making mistakes. And I think at that point, playing with your teammate becomes a little bit more of a liability. Because it's much more difficult to make decisions and to reach a consensus with your partner in a shorter amount of time, in like 10 seconds. It's so difficult, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like when you're just playing on your own, you kind of just make moves. And you don't have to consider the discussion part. That takes some extra time and effort. So it's all an internal process. This is like a partially internal, partially external process. And there's extra energy that you're using to discuss with someone else. Like, let's say I see a position and I think of like candidate moves, like 1, 2, 3. I discount two of them, I play the third. But let's say that there's actually five reasonable candidate moves, and I didn't even consider two of them. And now let's say that you suggest the other two. You're like, well, okay, you suggested three, but there's also these other two moves. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, so now I have to at least consider these other two moves. It takes extra time. It might be that the other two moves are good, and then you helped me, but it might be that the other two moves are not as good as the three that I considered, and then I just spent extra time to discount those. So it can either be very helpful in some positions or can be a time, just keep it, can be like extra time wasting. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's hard to say, but I think like at the end of this, Hikaru and Levy, they kind of played very well. Like this bishop c7 move, Hikaru suggested it first. And, but like they had a very good, like it was a very quick process. Like Hikaru suggested, but he's not 100% sure. But Levy just like makes the move, and it would end up being then rook c8, and then they quickly realize rook d5, and rook c7 is not working out. So like, and then queen e8, like queen f3, everything just worked out really nicely at the end. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if they get in flow, it could be tricky.
Yeah, but... and the thing is, they were both teams were at this point in time trouble. So they did use that extra time that they got at the beginning, given their white piece choosing in the Armageddon. They did use all of their time to get into this better position, winning position, and then convert it. What would you say a good Armageddon time would be? Would you go for the more time bid or for the less time and try to take black?
Man, I think this format does naturally lead to like more combative games. Uh-huh. But you have an increment, so you can get flagged. And if the opening goes well, I would probably prefer to take black.
Interesting. Okay.
Because if the opening goes well, yeah, then you probably won't end up in any trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's no like pressure that you'll get flagged. So what would we bid in like a 10-minute? I probably shouldn't say this.
Yeah, we should probably not say this.
But I think you can go a little bit on the lower side compared to like a normal Armageddon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Cool, Fabi, we'll keep it short this time because still plenty of things are happening. Prague is happening right now. Today was absolutely bonkers. A lot of mistakes, a lot of blunders, but I'm sure we'll cover those at a later time, maybe after the event is over, in our next podcast. A few things to mention. If you do want to support the podcast, the easiest way is to like and subscribe. The second easiest, and you get something for that as well. It's going to our merch store and getting the new Team Caruana drop. That's going to be a limited edition. We're not 100% sure when that edition is going to stop, most likely after the candidates. So you do have some time, but that's not going to be there forever. So go get your Team Caruana shirt if you want to. Go get your Who's Fisher and YC So Random t-shirt or hoodie if that's your option. But yeah, go check it out. See if you like any of those garments and support channel. That's the second best way to support channel. But of course, tell your friends where you hang out, where you listen to your podcasts. And we'll see you once again next week, most likely, or in just a few days in our next episode. See you guys. Cheers.